I'm fine, really. This is contempt.
Hey, Jackie.
Hi.
Welcome to Seen and Heard.
Why, thank you.
This is the podcast where two entertainment assistants go through the Sight and Sound Top 100 Greatest Films of All Time list. I'm Greg.
I'm Jackie.
And because of ping pong, because we do... First of all, yes, we're still working off the 2012 list. Although this film is on also the 2022
yes,
list.
Yes, it is.
It remained. But we do ping pong between the top and the bottom of the list, working our way towards the center. What number is the film this week?
Number 21 on the 2012 list. Number 54 on the 2022 list.
So it got bumped a pretty decent amount.
That's a big bump.
This is Godard's Contempt, mm-hmm. or Le Mépris.
Mm-hmm.
But before we get into this week's film, what have you been watching lately, Jackie? That's not Contempt.
A lot of stuff, because it was Christmas, and then it was the weird week in between Christmas and New Year. So a lot of stuff. I really dedicated some time to watch some new releases from this year, because I was really behind. Still am, don't get me wrong, but I saw The Whale.
And?
Truly, truly ridiculous. Like, actually laughably ridiculous. I'm shocked. I'm really shocked. Like, it was bad. I love Brendan Fraser. This was just not a good movie by any means.
That's what I've heard.
Like, really. I truly, like, at moments I couldn't believe what was on the screen. Especially the ending. I couldn't believe it. It's like a weird mix of like Hallmark and some like thriller type tension that he's going for. Like, I just can't believe that the man who made Black Swan made this movie. I truly can't believe it. That's The Whale. I saw Decision to Leave, which was amazing.
I really want to see that.
Really amazing. You'd love it. Actually, I don't know now, because I thought I could tell what you like, but apparently I can't. Decision to Leave, very, very good. One of my favorites of this year. It's way less, like, if you see the trailers, they make it seem like it's a really, like, wicked, like, woman possessing this man, like, that type of femme fatale. And, I mean, in a way it kind of is, but it also is, like, strangely very tender. It's not as, like, wicked as they were selling it to be at all. It's kind of a love story, like an actual love story. So I really, really liked it. I saw Pinocchio, which I know you didn't like, Guillermo del Toro's.
Oh, yeah. It's not that I didn't like it. I was just like thoroughly unimpressed.
I was very impressed, and I can't wait to show it to my kids.
Aw.
Really, truly. Like, while I was watching it, I'm like, wow, an actual good children's movie.
Well, yes and no. I don't know how like child appropriate some of that is. Like, it's pretty
fascism.
Bleak. It's pretty bleak. Like, that's an older kid movie.
But not as bleak as I thought. You think Pinocchio and you think Guillermo del Toro and you're like, wow, this is going to be torturous. Wasn't as harsh as I thought it was going to be. Truly. Even though there were fascists in it.
Right.
I really didn't think it was that bad. I expected way, way harsher of a movie. So I was pleasantly surprised, because I did watch it on Christmas Eve and I'm like, what am I doing? Like, am I about to watch something really dark? But alas, no. Guess what I watched the day before Christmas Eve?
What?
The Muppet Christmas Carol.
Oh my God. Finally.
It was very lovely.
Did you watch that, the extended version?
Yes,
in the extras?
With the one extra song.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's a good song.
It is.
It's a good song. Michael Caine is incredible. He's so good in it. It's just a great time.
I love it so much.
It's very sweet. My mom loved it. She hates Christmas Carol. Like, she does not like the Christmas Carol story. It was always too dark for her. So she really liked this one.
It's the best version of that story.
Yeah, that's what I've been watching. A lot more, but I'll skip over. For once, I have a lot of movies
wow.
to say. Look at that. What have you been watching?
Speaking of terrible movies, I saw Glass Onion, the Knives Out sequel.
You did?
Oh my God. If I can say one thing about the film, which I already didn't want to see because the first Knives Out was incredibly, like, I wasn't super bothered by the first Knives Out, but I just thought it was like the most unremarkable movie I'd ever seen.
It's pretty cookie cutter.
This one was like, Rian Johnson should be fucking embarrassed, especially for the script. The script is limp, it's clumsy, and it's relentlessly unfunny.
Wow.
It was a piece of trash.
Wow.
That you find at the bottom of a dumpster.
Wow.
And the fact that Daniel Craig has hitched his wagon to this like series, like post-Bond, is really so weird. Baffling. Because like, I get that he's trying to distance himself from the character, but like, his whole Southern accent, like, inspector thing, it seems like an SNL skit. Like, it'd be funny for, like, 2 minutes, but, like, now we have two films where he's this
and character. More to come.
And more to come. Yeah, terrible fucking movie.
Wow.
And then
Wait, really quick, can I just say, I saw this, like, I think it was an IndieWire article where Rian Johnson said that he was so mad that the producers made him add, like...
The subtitle?
Yeah, a Glass Onion mystery.
No, but it's like, a Knives Out mystery.
Oh, yeah, a Knives Out mystery. But it's the same character, isn't it? Like,
he's like, I read that interview, too. And he was like, I worked so hard to make this a standalone thing.
But
like,
it has the same detective.
Well, yeah. But it's, of course, how do you have to work hard? It's a different story with new characters. You literally just write a different script and just bring in the one character from before. I don't get how that's hard work. No, I saw that, too. And it's like, does he not know how big studio movies work?
Yeah
Like, I'm sure he got Final Cut, but he's throwing a little bitch fit over this title. It just shows you what like a man child he is. I am not a Rian Johnson fan. I think
really
he is so supremely untalented.
Wow.
And a god-awful screenwriter, and he is the sole writer of this of Glass Onion.
Nice.
So I saw more stuff, but I also saw My Night at Mods. The Eric Romare film.
You've never seen it before?
I'd never seen it.
What?
Loved it. Loved
Such a good Christmas Eve movie.
Yeah, I loved that. God, that was great. It. So, unfortunately, I did, without tipping my hand too much, I did see Glass Onion and Contempt in the same day. So, let's get into this week's film.
You're horrible.
Is it 1963?
Yes.
From 1963, this is Jean-Luc Godard's Contempt.
Contempt, or Le Mépris, was released in 1963. It was written and directed by Jean-Luc Godard, based on a novel called Il Disprezzo, or A Ghost at Noon, by Italian author Alberto Moravia. Raoul Cotard is the cinematographer. Music by George Delrue. Funnily enough, the Spanish and Italian version have different music by someone named Piero Piccioni?
Why would they do that?
No idea. The music is beautiful.
Oh my, it's iconic.
Yeah. The film tells the story of the final days of marriage between Paul and Camille Javal. Paul is a French playwright and screenwriter who has been hired by an American producer, Jeremy Prokosch, to rewrite an adaptation of The Odyssey to be directed by German legend Fritz Lang. Paul is hesitant because the producer wants him to make the film more commercial and less intact with Lang's vision, but offers to pay him handsomely. Trouble for the couple starts when Jeremy offers to give Camille a ride in his car alone, and although she looks to her husband to step in, Paul says nothing, encouraging her, in fact, to go with him. Back at their flat, the couple have a long discussion about what Camille's issue is and why she seems to have stopped loving Paul almost instantly. Coming to no definite conclusions, except that she no longer loves him, the couple go to Capri to stay at Prokosch's villa and see some of the Odyssey being shot. There, irritated at Paul's continued indifference, Camille kisses Prokosch. She tells Paul she is leaving him and is getting a ride to Rome with Prokosch. On the way, they are in an accident, and both Camille and Jeremy are killed. The film ends with Paul watching one last scene of the Odyssey being shot. Odysseus finally sees Ithaca again. The film stars Brigitte Bardot as Camille, Jack Palance as Jeremy Prokosh, and Michel Piccoli as Paul. The film opens with a behind-the-scenes look at a film scene being shot, and the cameraman is the cinematographer, Cotard, and later in the film, Fritz Lang's assistant director is played by Jean-Luc Godard himself.
How delightfully meta.
I love it! The opening credits are read, I think, by Godard. I think that's him reading them. But what are the frickin' chances that 1 week after Magnificent Ambersons, we land on another movie with red credits?
Oh, yeah.
Like, that Weird. Is the magic of ping pong, you guys. There's really, like, there's a magic here.
There is.
It's very strange.
I think it's the best method, really.
It's so strange. Really, what are the chances of that?
You know, one of these days, you and I should have a ping pong, like, tournament.
We should. We should record an episode while
you just hear the ball. Yeah.
So Godard originally wanted Kim Novak and Frank Sinatra for the roles of the Javals, but both turned down the parts. He then reportedly went to Monica Vitti, but it didn't work out.
She's like, hey, I work with better directors than you. Sorry.
Okay. Sophia Loren and Marcello Mastroianni were also suggested, but didn't work out.
I wonder why.
I wonder why as well. Eventually, he cast Brigitte Bardot at the urging of his producers. And after principal photography was complete, the producers complained that her beautiful physique was not utilized and taken advantage of as much as it could have been. So that opening scene in which the couple discuss all the parts of her body was added.
And you can tell.
Is ironic considering what the movie's about. Yes. Very ironic and meta. The production was really rough because Godard wasn't used to such a big scale. He wasn't used to having paparazzi around. They followed Brigitte Bardot everywhere. And Jack Palance was unhappy and wanted to quit.
I think that's him on every movie. The guy was a known curmudgeon.
Yeah, it was shot in Capri and Rome. The score was actually recycled by Martin Scorsese in Casino.
Yep.
So if you've seen Casino, you've heard this music.
And you hear it in like award ceremonies and shit.
It's beautiful. Like, yeah. It really, really is beautiful. I would just like to mention that this movie is now number 54 on the 2022 list. And Ali, Fear Eats the Soul, is number 52. Like, the fact that Ali jumped before this is incredible.
Good.
And The Piano is number 50.
Good.
And 400 Blows is also number 50.
Good. Those are all better
films. It's just funny that it's so low.
Yeah.
Well, I think I know your initial thoughts, but why don't you tell them to me anyway?
Wait, why do you know my initial thoughts? Oh, because of Letterboxd.
Yeah, I think we should not log Letterboxd.
Yeah, you know what? Or we can log them, but not give them a star rating until after we've recorded.
You know what? I don't even like giving stars anymore.
I like giving stars.
I don't like it. I only give stars to movies that I want to keep track of, movies I really like that I want to keep track of. If I didn't like a movie, I don't rate it.
Well, that's why I rate it.
Or if it's like a childhood movie that I love and I don't need to like prove my love, yeah. I never put stars.
I get that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think going forward, let's not give a star rating and then we'll be a surprise on the podcast.
Yeah.
And we don't have to text each other during the movie like, God, this movie sucks, which I did not do for this.
But I saw it.
You saw my, what, 2.5 stars?
Yeah, that's really, really, really offensive.
Okay. First of all, my initial thoughts are, I don't know why you like this movie.
Really?
My second thought is, it just, okay, like, people who have been listening for a while know that I'm like hot and cold on Godard. Overall, I kind of could leave him rather than take him. I really like a handful of his films. It may have sounded like in our Breathless episode, I don't like Breathless. I actually like Breathless a decent amount. I just don't think it's like a masterpiece. I don't think it belongs on the top 10. I like Vive Sevilla a lot. That's the best one I've seen so far. And then everything else, I think I've kind of disliked. I hated Weekend. I hated Pierre LeFou. Which other ones have I seen? A couple others, and I didn't like any of the other ones.
Band of Outsiders.
You know what? Actually, I have not seen that all the way through. But unfortunately, I'm gonna have to add this to my. Hate is a strong word. I didn't hate this movie, but I think this movie is utterly up its own ass, useless, annoying, and shitty. No, that's harsh. I'm still riled up about Knives Out and Rian Johnson. No.
Because you watched them in the same day.
Well, here's the thing. I watched Contempt first. So Contempt set the mood And then Knives Out.
Okay, can I ask you what your initial thought was when the movie started and you saw that dolly moving towards you and the camera looking at you?
Okay, so I'll tell you. I mean, that didn't do anything for me. Fuck that. He's so obsessed with that shit.
If Bergman did that, you'd be like, oh my God. And you did in our Persona episode.
Let me tell you, this movie's like an hour 45. You know what, Jackie? I swear, for the first hour, I was really into this. I really was.
I could totally see that.
And I was like, oh my God, like because, he's getting me.
Yes. When I was watching it, I was thinking of you because I'm like, I really thought Greg was going to like this movie. But then once it reaches the apartment, and I think, I mean, I personally like it, but I think that the fact that it goes on so long, I'm like, this is probably where Greg is going to lose it. Was it that part?
Sure.
It was, sure. Right?
And then it continued to lose me the further on it went.
Okay.
I think, like, look, I love Before Midnight, the third and Linklater's Before trilogy, and that movie is one extended argument. So I like the sort of, like, that one's my favorite in the Before
that's
movies.
That's really upsetting that's your favorite. That's really
I know.
Upsetting.
I don't know what that says.
It says something you very dark about
it's
you.
It's the most mature of the films.
I love it. No,
it's
don't get me mature. Wrong. I do love it, but in no way is it my favorite.
But that movie, basically, if you have not seen Before Midnight, which you absolutely should, the whole series is fantastic, but that movie is one big cyclical argument.
It's really sad.
And it feels real.
Yeah.
So my problem.
But the other two feel real. Excuse me.
No, sure. But I'm saying compared to Contempt.
Sure.
Where it is this argument that is cyclical, and it's just a matter of being like, do you love me? I do. Do you love me? I do. What's wrong? Oh, nothing. Wait, maybe something. That for the whole fucking movie, get fucked. Get fucked. I have better things to do with my time than sit here and watch two piece of shit characters that I don't care about go down this drain of like, do you love me? Yes, I do. Oh, wait, maybe I don't. Oh, wait, maybe I do. Maybe I don't. Like, I don't fucking care. This movie is up its own ass.
Oh my God.
It's so self-important. Like, Godard really thinks he's like making something substantial here. And it's like, no wonder Marcello and everyone turned it down. It's a piece of shit. But I have to say, the first hour I was like,
I mean, that movie's only an hour and 45 minutes. So it seems like most of it you
liked. The first half I liked until I realized it was just spiraling the fucking drain, just doing the same things were being said over and over and over again. And again, I guess if I'm invested in the characters, like it's not a big deal, but like, I didn't like anyone in this movie except for Fritz Lang.
You didn't like Francesca?
I just don't care.
I actually really like Bridget Bardot's character.
And honestly, gross. And I didn't know that about like them wanting to show her off more. So they filmed that opening. I didn't know that, but you can tell while watching the movie, the camera's like oogling over her body in a really gross way.
I don't think it is. I think that even in the beginning part, she's lying on her belly. It's those like sharp colors. It's kind of diffused. Like you're not really staring at her naked body. Like,
you are.
You're like,
seeing her butt and her legs.
Well, yeah, but it's not like she's saying like, do you like my butt? And then it's close up of her butt. Do you like my boobs? It's close up of her boobs. It's not. It's like, it's from a distance and it's these big colors in front of it that make it, I hate to say it, but artsy.
Well, why are they artsy? What's the point of the colors?
I think it makes it less explicit. Anyway, continue.
I just can't. You know, like,
I just can't.
I'm pretty fed up with Godard. I think he's like mostly a hack. And I think all of his contemporaries were doing much, much more interesting things, from Agnes Varda to Truffaut to René to Antonioni. There was I could sense a lot of Antonioni influence in here, especially this comes 3 years after La Ventura. And it's so self-involved, I can't even begin. Like, just can't. But see, why it's frustrating for me is because Godard has it in him to make a compelling film. And I think he's just like, he's like so in his own head that he constantly just keeps tripping over himself and second guessing himself. And every Godard film is so inherently a Godard film. Like, he's calling so much attention to himself to such an annoying degree. Like, he's worse than Tarantino.
Yeah.
It's totally. Like, bro, we know. Like, put your stupid glasses on and fuck off. I feel like I'm being too mean. at the end of the day, I don't hate this movie because the first hour was like pretty compelling stuff. And obviously the score is great. And I know we just talked about this on a previous episode. I forget which one. But I like how often the score is played because it's a beautiful theme. Mm-hmm. I know some people on Letterboxd were annoyed that the theme kept playing over and over. But it's beautiful and it made it kind of operatic. Mm-hmm. Even when seemingly very little is happening, mm-hmm. to have this theme played again and again, like, heightened it.
I agree.
So yeah, ultimately a very, like, it's not my least favorite Godard. That's Weekend, which is a literal piece of dumpster trash.
Well, Weekend is his end of cinema.
Good for him.
No, like, it says it at the end of Weekend. This is the end of cinema. Like, he's done with, like, narrative, like.
Right.
But you see the deterioration.
Weekend literally starts with a card that says, like, this film was found in a dumpster. It does. It does. No, but, yeah, so it's not my least favorite Godard because I was kind of enraptured for the first, you know, act or so of this. And then it really fell off when I realized this is all the film was going to be about, was this stupid, shitty argument between two super unlikable people. And again, we just did La Ventura about these also kind of rich, bougie, unhappy people. But that film is just leagues better than this one. Mm-hmm. So yeah, this is one of my least favorite films that we've done for the show so far.
Wow.
How about you?
I love this movie.
Good. I think this is our biggest divide.
So I think that the characters in this are definitely more fledged out than a lot of his other stuff. I know you don't think they are, but I really do think that this is like a rich text. Like text. Like think about all the poetry. Think about all the Odyssey. Think about all like all the talking. Oh, wow.
He's making allusions to the Odyssey. Good for
him.
Think
about all the... Okay. it's a serious drama in a way, like... In a lot of ways where I feel like other Godard movies are like experiments or homages or sexy thrillers, like this is a serious drama. And I think there's a definite weight, like a burden here. And it obviously has to do with the story being so personal to him. Him and Anna Karina were like on the rocks when this was made. They would get a divorce a year later. People really herald this as his like definitive masterpiece. I don't think that's the case. I do love it, but I don't think it's the case. I think some parts are way better than others. But what's interesting, and like going back to this where I said like this is a serious drama, like I'm really emotional at the end. And that doesn't happen to me with Godard that much. Like it's mostly like his movies to me, honestly, it may sound, and I don't mean to like demean him, but like most of his movies are fun to me. Like I watch it for fun. Like I have a great time. It's silly. It's French, whatever. Like I have a great time. But this one is tragic. Like this and Vive Sa Vie. Tragic, right? I think that like it just works for me, like the intentional placement of like the statues and the gods and like the music coming in, those montages of them being like super contemplative, working backwards and forwards in time in these montages, like it just works for me. The music is so beautiful. And who doesn't love a story about like a movie maker clashing with like money hungry producers? Like, I don't know. I just, it's like I said, it's very rich to me. Like I watch this and I'm like, there's so many, this movie is about so many things. And I really appreciate that. And it's beautiful to look at. And the music is gorgeous. I don't know. I really like this movie, and I will get into more depth, but those are my like initial thoughts, is that this movie carries like a weight to me that like other Godard movies don't seem to.
I feel like you're setting a pretty low bar for him.
Maybe I am. You think I like worship him. I don't know why. You have this running joke that I worship him. It's not the case at all. Like I said, his movies I watch for fun mostly, except Vive Sa Vie.
Yeah.
Like, have you seen A Woman is a Woman?
No.
It's fun. It's like a fun musical. And even Band of Outsiders.
Yeah.
Like, it's like a spy thing, you know? He's very genre-y in a way. Like,
yeah.
But this feels to me like his most serious drama.
Let's give him a pat on the back for that.
Yeah, you think I like really worship him, but it's not the case at all. But I do love this movie, and I think that it's, I think it's a success in my eyes.
I love how far apart we are on this one, because I don't think we've ever been further apart. Because usually if one of us hates something, the other one also hates it. Or they're like, yeah, I don't hate it as much as that, but it is bad. But like, usually we're kind of in the same ballpark.
But isn't it funny that I could tell once it gets to like the, once it got to like the hour mark and they're still at the apartment, I'm like, now I think Greg has lost it.
First of all, flattered that you know me that well. But second of all, wait, what keyed you into like that I was, that I would be,
I really thought
that
when it opened, I thought the dolly shot, like you would be really into that, which apparently you weren't.
It's fine.
Let me tell you, if Bergman did that, you would be like, oh my God, daddy.
Bergman is not so showy.
Okay. I thought the whole Fritz Lang thing you would really like.
I did.
The whole like car thing, and then the music comes in and he's chasing her and he says,
wait, what?
Like when she gets in the car with,
oh right,
Jeremy,
right,
like that whole part I thought you would really like, even like a lot of the apartment stuff, because in Breathless there is that long sequence where they're at the apartment and we talked about that and you liked that, right?
Yeah,
yeah. I don't know.
I don't have any major problems with Breathless.
I thought the music,
just don't think
you would really,
yeah,
love.
I do love the music.
The music, the scenery.
You know, I don't think this movie looks as beautiful as some people seem to think it does.
I think it does.
I think, it, again, it's like not even a fly on Antonioni's rear view, you know, viewfinder.
Right. But let's talk about Anna Karina.
Okay.
So, like I said, they would divorce a year later. The story goes, for those of you who don't know, Anna Karina is a legend. She was discovered by Godard. She appeared in many of his movies. They were married for several years and they eventually divorced. But even after they divorced, they continued to make movies together. And she was like, very obviously his muse, and she's obviously gorgeous, and so this movie is, I mean, a lot of people describe this movie as like an elegy to their marriage, which I think is heartbreaking. The story goes that she had a miscarriage and he would leave her alone for long periods of time. She eventually started an affair with a co-star, and yeah, their last movie together was made in the USA after they were already divorced. But, you know, like, I know you think, like, this movie is, like, so up his ass. But you know what? I am okay with that. Because, okay, so, first of all, let's talk about the Vive Sa Vie wig, right?
Sure.
So, Brigitte Bardot in this movie puts on a wig that looks just like Anna Karina's hair in Vive Sa Vie. What did you think about that?
I don't give a fuck.
See, that's annoying. I even wrote, I said, Greg, you'll probably think this is narcissistic.
You know, you could almost host this by yourself.
I'm going to host this episode by myself.
And do a deep voice like, for my response.
Sure, sure. but I like...
Well, it's, we just
here's
did La Ventura where Monica Vitti also puts on a brown wig.
Exactly.
Or a black wig.
But this is very intentionally like Anna Karina's wig.
Right.
But here's the thing. And normally I'd be like, wow, that's like really an invasion of privacy, or like that's like going too far. Maybe.
Oh, I don't think it's going too far.
Okay, but listen. So you're okay with that?
I just don't give a fuck, like, is what I'm saying. Is
okay, but listen. When your whole, when the whole world knows about your relationship and your relationship is so tied to your work, it's intrinsic in your work. Your work is tied to your relationship. Relationship is tied to work. I think it's such a vulnerable thing that he did there. And I do think this movie is 100% on Camille's side. It is 100% on her side. And thereby like kind of an apology to Anna Karina.
Then why the fuck does he kill her at the end?
So, I don't know.
Exactly.
For someone for whom cinema is their entire life, like actually their entire life, and I'm talking about Godard, I think that it's like, this movie is like tragically appropriate and sad.
Literally so many great filmmakers, cinema was their entire lives.
No, I understand, but I mean like to make a movie
treatment
where it's like tied, like your relationship and the death of cinema is tied together, like
sure.
Oh my God. And I'm not saying that to put Jean-Luc on a pedestal. Like I don't think he's a god by any means. I don't think any director is a god.
He's
a very important player, and I think that this movie as an elegy of his marriage is very beautiful. And the way that it's connected to the death of cinema.
You know,
wow.
The fact that I brought up the part at the end where she and Jack Palance are killed in a car accident.
Yes.
And you were like, I don't know.
No. Do you want to talk about it?
Let's talk about it. So, because that was the moment. When that happened, that was the last nail in the coffin for me. Like, it's like a child wrote this movie.
Well, I think that is like, that part really goes into like the whole like gods and men type of thing going on and about like circumstances.
Up its own ass.
Well, that's what it is, buddy. Because a lot of people are like, okay, like in the movie, they say it all the time. Like there's this direct comparison to the Odyssey and there's all these allusions. Like he's wearing this towel that's like a toga. And then like the producer, when he gets mad and he throws that film canister, mm-hmm. he's literally like an old like disc thrower. Anyway.
It's like so annoying.
No, but like they talk about like circumstances in the Odyssey and how it's like men just dealing with their circumstances. So then I started thinking about it and I'm like, okay, so like the power and money of this producer is versus like the common man, but that's, I don't think that that's the case at all. I don't mm-hmm. think it's a case of circumstance. I think he's making a conscious choice to make this movie.
Right.
The end is like the traditional tragedy circumstance. Nothing humans can do about it.
Right.
That's why she dies.
I mean, all I can say is a much better film about the Odyssey is Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Totally.
I don't know. It's just so fucking heavy-handed. The fact that it's just and that death. What a stupid,
okay,
shitty way to do it. Too.
I actually think it's really lovely. The fact that we see the letter, that we're just like close up on the letter, and we hear a car accident. I think that's. I actually love that. Like that's one of the visual language things of this movie that I love.
One of the few.
That I love the statues. I love those montages. I love that scene where they're like in the apartment and they're going back and forth and it's just a slow pan between him and her and the lamp in between.
Oh,
them.
That sucks.
What the fuck is wrong with
you? I actively hated that scene because he's drawing. It's almost like he can't just settle down and put the camera down. He has to keep moving it like a child that's had too much candy. And the way he keeps moving that camera back and forth and like flickering the light and stuff.
I don't think the light is flickering.
It is because what's his name keeps turning it on and off.
I don't remember that.
And the camera just
keeps going back
and forth. And
I don't have a problem with it, even if I do remember
it. It's so just like, hey, look at me, I'm behind the camera.
Okay.
And this is coming from someone who likes Tarantino and Gaspar Noé and like...
You don't think it's interesting the way that like in the mountain, like when they're at the villa, like she walks out of frame, like, and there's that beautiful mountain and then he walks into frame. And then when she like takes off, later when she like takes off her robe, jumps in the water and then she appears swimming. Like, you don't think that's beautiful?
I think that's Antonioni light.
Okay.
Sorry. It's so funny. Any goodwill I had for this film in the first 45 minutes or hour was completely squashed after a certain
It's really
point.
Sad.
I know. It's sad because this could have been something. This could have been something.
You don't identify at all with the couple or the characters.
No.
See, that's strange.
In the way that he presents it, no, I don't.
Okay.
And like, could the screenwriter be any more unlikable? And like,
I don't think he's supposed to be likable. I think it is her story.
Well, he's supposed to be Godard.
Exactly.
Right?
So it's kind of like this self-hate thing. He's an asshole. He slaps that girl's ass. He slaps her. Like, he's a dick.
I don't know. It's like a matter of Godard calling himself out, but he's still doing this stuff in real life. Like, he was notoriously kind of a shitty, you know.
Yeah.
As Becca said, he made Agnes Varda cry.
Well, that's fucked up. I'm not defending him. I'm saying that this is a good movie.
I think this is like, ugh.
Can we talk about the actual movie and yeah. not?
I have a note here. This
your
is,
feelings?
I have a note that says overwrought horse shit.
Wow.
Okay, let's talk about the film.
How can you not identify with wanting to do art? But also money. Like, how do you not identify with that? How do you not identify with being swooned by, like, a big check?
I do, but he just doesn't let us in to the characters. He doesn't
let us in. It costs him his marriage. It costs him his life. The death of his wife.
Boo-hoo.
I'm literally about to walk out the door.
I cannot...
talk about this movie? Then why are we continuing the episode?
Well, it's not that I can't talk about it, but it's like... Godard is one of those filmmakers that thinks that an illusion, this illusion with an A, is the same thing as having substance. Neither side is compelling, is what I'm saying.
You mean neither side of like the couple like is compelling? You don't think it's fucked up that he said like, yeah, go with him twice?
I think the fact that he's so thick that he doesn't understand why she's mad at him.
He does understand.
Then why did he spend the whole fucking movie asking her what's wrong if he knows what's wrong?
Okay, let me read you something.
Because he wants to hear her say it.
Let me read you something. First of all,
it's exhausting for us as an audience to hear him ask this question literally.
He
like
doesn't think that she's smart enough to be upset at that. That is the core. That's one of the core issues.
But isn't that inherently fucked up? It's fucked up.
Yes, it's sad. So let me read you something from the thing, the Criterion essay on this, which is very good. It's actually very good. It's written by Philip Lopate. She, being Cammy, even makes various conciliating moves, assuring him she loves him, but because of his insecurities, he refuses this comfort. Paul is a man worrying a canker sore. Whenever Cammy begins to forgive, to be tender again, he won't accept it. He keeps asking her why she no longer loves him until the hypothesis becomes a reality. Paul is more interested in having his worst nightmares confirmed than in rehabilitating the damage. And then he goes on to say, the film's psychology shows a rich understanding of the mutual complicities inherent in contempt. Along with the fact that trying to alter another person's contemptuous opinion of yourself is like fighting in quicksand. The more you struggle, the farther you sink in.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I mean, sure, but for what?
But their love is already so frail at the beginning. Like, oh, of course. Literally saying, like, yeah, I love your body.
Yeah.
I mean, he says, like, tenderly, tragically, totally. Like, that's, yeah, that's romantic. But, like, still, like, she's literally just describing body parts. And he's like, yeah, love that. Love that, too. Love mm-hmm. it.
Yeah. It's you're right. From the beginning, it's all about her body and nothing else.
And it doesn't help that he gropes Francesca.
But
and
the fact that the film leers on her naked body.
I don't think it does.
It does. I feel like there's such a male gaze in this film.
Definitely a male gaze, but I think that it is on her side in a weird, fucked up way. Like, okay, she says like that line about, oh, ever since you started hanging out with movie people, like I've loved you less. And yeah, maybe it's true. Maybe he's hanging around these creepy guys and like he starts groping that random translator. And it changed him. And it's like, it's really about like his dignity as an artist and a man. And like the way that he loses it and he loses her love for that. Like, it's like he literally sacrifices her.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, sure. And then she dies in the end.
Yes.
And it's all just so unnecessary.
What?
Like, this is not a story I care about.
Okay.
Let's talk about some of the things he does in this film. Like you were talking about the changing colors in that opening scene.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the Godard films I've seen, this is one of the more restrained stylistically, right? Like some of them, like Pierre Le Fou or something, are like really on another level, Breathless, like mm-hmm. very, very stylized. Mm-hmm. This film is more reserved, mm-hmm. but he uses a couple flourishes. I think I liked, you know, the first half because it was more reserved. But he uses a couple things. For example, the scene when they all go to see the singers, and it's mm-hmm. like Fritz Lang and yeah. Jack Palance and everybody. And the way that he cuts out the music while people are talking, did you notice that? Like people, as soon as someone opens their mouths, he just like mutes the music. And then when they finish their sentence, the music comes back on.
I didn't catch
it. Was such
it.
A like, oh, for me, it stood out as like such an annoying little thing to do of like.
I didn't catch it.
My favorite thing, and I've seen this in a bunch of things, but David Lynch does it. But like if people are in a room where like music is really loud, he'll have people talk and you can barely hear them, but he'll put subtitles up.
Mm.
But I don't know. That just seemed like such a needless.
I like the way that they sit at different aisles at the cinema. But really, it's like, I don't know. I'm still going back because I do like, I watch this and I think it is a compelling argument and marriage. Like I think that it's interesting that it's tied to his marriage and his ideas of being an artist and movies and yeah, I find it weird that you don't relate to that at all.
I think because so many more compelling stories have been told in that same space, not by Godard. I think I just don't care enough about his life to care about it on
and
the
like,
screen.
But it's not a his life, like the little victories and
well, it
like,
is. I mean, he is basically the writer character.
Yes, but like that whole argument, like you can tell when she's lying, you can tell when she's not lying. Like, does she actually want to sleep on the couch? Maybe she actually does. And it's like that writer in that essay said, like he literally beats her into submission of saying, yeah, I don't love you. Yeah, let's say it's because of Francesca, but it's obviously not.
Right.
Like, you don't find like hidden thoughts interesting?
Not in this film.
Okay, then. We have nothing to talk about, then.
I, you know, look, with everyone I see, like, I don't go into this being like, fuck this movie, fuck Godard. Because I don't even hate the guy. But I'm like, let's give this a shot. And like I said, it had me until it didn't. And it's like unfortunate when that happens, when a movie turns around on you. But, you know, I didn't set out to like hate this movie.
What about Fritz Lang?
Oh, well, there's a master. There's a master.
He's like the cinema sage. He's like spitting out poetry and anecdotes.
Yeah,
and
I can
analogies.
Only imagine the pitch with Godard. Like, hey, Fritz, do you want to be in my movie where you're just like the old wise man? Like,
CinemaScope. It wasn't made for people, but for snakes and funerals.
Now he's great. You know, I love that he's.
I love what he says about like, I love when the producer freaks out and he's like, that's not what was on the script. And he's like, because in the script it's written, but on the screen it's pictures.
Right.
Love that.
Yeah.
I love Fritz.
Well, there's a thing too, when he first introduces her to Fritz, she brings up a movie like, oh, we just saw so-and-so on TV, one of his films, one of the.
And then he goes, I prefer M.
Yeah, I prefer M. Yeah.
I love that moment when Fritz Lang, it like switches to Fritz's perspective and he watches Camille and Paul like come together and the music swells, but it's like from Fritz's POV. It's gorgeous.
I didn't even.
It's like
check
a director is literally watching this like couple in love come together and like hear music. I think it's beautiful. Like,
yeah, but the whole film is like littered with the score. So
I just
know.
That moment is really beautiful to me.
So the rest is just God watching them and hearing this beautiful music.
You know what I would like to say? It's so funny that I don't know if she's like the script girl or whatever. Like she's in a bikini the whole time. Like she literally calls the scene. She goes like, Odyssey, take one. And she's like in a bikini with sunglasses, like having the time of her life. It's just funny.
Yeah, because you feel some disdain, obviously, for the film industry in this movie. And it takes place at Cinecittà in Italy, which is where so many great films were made. But you do sense this, like, because there is that line about movie people. Ever since you've been hanging around with movie people, like, you've been different.
And he's
stuff.
A scumbag.
Yeah,
he gropes that girl. What about the way the producer makes Francesca bend over so
and
he can write that
check?
Yeah. That's wild. Okay, so like you see that and you talk shit about it, but in Dolce Vita, you have Marcello riding a girl and you're like, damn, that's debauchery. That's fucking cool. But
it's
you
different.
Think that, this is different. This is fucked up. This is real.
Wait, how is this real and that's not?
This is like an actual person in power. Never mind.
Yeah, but so are people in that film too. Lots of people in power doing debauchery.
No, but this shit is still happening today. That's those bunch of rich people in Italy who got drunk. This is like an actual person in power making a girl bend over to write a check on her.
Well, no, I don't have a problem with that scene.
Okay.
I have a problem with him throwing the film canisters. Like that seemed.
That was an illusion.
I know. It was too on the nose.
I liked it. It
was too on the nose.
I liked it.
No, the writing the check thing was not subtle, but. You know, hey, it works.
Don't you think that Fritz Lang's Odyssey is kind of like Color of Pomegranates, but Greek?
I guess. You know the funny thing? Fritz Lang wouldn't even make a film like that.
Why?
I don't know.
He's like, I want to go back to the silent. Like, did you not see like the clips of the movie?
Of course I saw the clips.
I don't think we watched the same movie.
I feel like he wouldn't make anything so esoteric, Fritz Lang. I don't
know.
Jackie, where does this rank for you in your Godard pantheon?
I like Vive Sa Vie and Breathless, and this probably. I love Pierre Le Fou. I know you don't like it. I think it's a great gay old time. It really is. Yeah.
So this is like third for you,
probably.
Yeah, and number one is Vive Sa Vie. It's funny that we both love that movie.
It's a great movie.
Oh, yeah. Again, there's not really many tricks in that movie.
No, Vive Sa Vie is like the most simple, clean, good like
character study.
I really like it. And Vive Sa Vie was my first, like when I said like I'm going to watch like new wave movies. I guess it was like 400 Blows and then Vive Sa Vie. And so it's very special to me.
It's a special movie. It's a diamond in the rough.
Yeah.
I felt bad having never seen this movie because this is such a, this was his first commercial film. Like this film was a crossover thing and Jack Palance is in it. And people saw it all over the world compared to some of his earlier films, which were, maybe took a little longer to be seen by the world. Mm-hmm. So I'd heard about this for years. I'm like, always like, oh yeah, shit. I got to see Contempt. And I just can't believe that I finally saw it. And like, this is all it is.
Yeah. So you don't think you'll ever watch it again?
No, I wouldn't say that. I'll watch this again in like 10 years. If I don't like it that time, that'll probably be the end of it.
I'd love to see this in a theater. I feel like that'd be really fun.
I guess.
Well, I think we should end the episode before we kill each other.
Do you think so? Wait, do you have anything else?
I have Sight and Sound.
Oh. Look, I mean, I just want to reiterate again, like, I'm not out for blood. Like, any film I put on, I want to like the movie, ultimately. And, you know, I'm rooting for movies. It's like when I don't hate Godard. I just think he's incredibly middle of the road. But, like, you know, I wanted to like this, and I did like it for a bit until I didn't. And then I didn't, and it's unfortunate, but it happens. And what can I say? I have seen some incredible movies lately, so maybe this was like tipping the scales, you know, after La Ventura and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Magnificent.
Yeah, we also did that last week, which, you know, I was punished 2 weeks in a row, so.
Do you even have a favorite Sight?
No. I was like trying to think about this, and I think the closest thing I could come that wasn't like an Antonioni ripoff, like of them like wandering onto the stairs, like on top of this house on an island, which I don't give a fuck about, is probably the end credit. Does it say Fiend or does it just end? That's my favorite because it ends.
Do you have a favorite sound?
Actually, my favorite Sight is at Cinecittà when the camera is moving past all these great film posters of movies I'd rather be watching than this one.
Nice.
So that'll be my favorite Sight.
Do you have a favorite sound?
Yeah, the score, of course. We played it in the intro, but the main theme. So okay. I guess we played it earlier, but we'll play another snippet of it right now. Beautiful.
It is beautiful. My favorite Sight and Sound are combined.
Oh.
It is after Kemi has come in Jeremy's car and like Paul finally catches up with them and he sees her for the first time. And like Jeremy kind of like walks out of frame, but then we just get closer and closer to her, and she's so sad, and the music is so sad, and it's just beautiful.
Yeah, the music really, is doing really a lot of heavy lifting. Yes,
I agree.
Which a good film score should do.
Yeah, but she's so sad and like disappointed in that moment, and it's just lovely.
Nice.
I think that this movie is very tragic, and although rough around the edges, tender.
Rough around the edges in what way?
Just in the way that it is like.
Oh, you mean like from an emotional standpoint? You don't mean from a construction?
No, from an emotional standpoint. Oh, okay, I think it's very tender.
So actually. I was like, wait, I didn't hear how you thought this was rough around the edges.
No. I mean, emotionally, think it's very tragic and yes, beautiful. And I fail to see how you fail to see any relevance to real life in this movie. because it is very, very much a struggle that I think anyone who wants to pursue the arts has to deal with. And yeah, I find it very hard to believe that you have never had issues.
Because there's plenty of great films about struggling with the arts that are better than this one.
Struggling about the arts and your relationship?
Well, you know what? Okay, fine. There's not that many, actually. which is why I wish this had been better. But my version of this, not that everything always needs to be compared, and I know you don't love this movie, but is La Piscine.
La Piscine. I like La Piscine.
Oh, okay. That's like, for me, that's like what I wanted from this.
No. La Piscine is like shallow compared to this.
I mean, but La Piscine works and this doesn't.
According to you. But according to the rest of the world, it works very well.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Yes, I guess I'm in the minority with this one.
Stay there. We don't want you here.
Well, this is normally where we would do a Pauline Kael review of the film, but I could not find one. I don't think that she reviewed the film.
Hmm.
Yeah. Because it did come out in 63, which was before she was kind of writing. Although, I don't know. It's not clear, but I could not find a Pauline Kael review for this. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah, like it is true that Jean-Luc Godard likes to kill women in his movies.
Yeah.
Very often.
Needlessly.
Well, yes, I feel like in Pierre Le Fou it's literally revenge, but in this it is not revenge. Like, that's why it's sad to me. Like, in this one it is pure tragedy.
It's just unnecessary.
I think that it brings together what we've been hearing the whole time about, like,
there could have been another tragedy. Maybe he should have died.
That would have been good. I would have been cool with that. But he has to suffer for the rest of it. This is worse for him. If he died, he would get no punishment, no comeuppance. Right. This is worse for him. It's self-hatred. I think her death in this is self-hatred. Whereas, yeah, in Pierre Le Fou, it might be like revenge. Anyway, that's my final word.
The final word. Should we do Letterboxd?
Yeah.
Okay, I've got a 1-star here. 1-star. Godard has never made a good movie.
3 stars. The scene where the American is giggling with joy at a naked woman on screen saying, "This is amazing. Do you think the general audience will understand?" sums up the movie perfectly.
Annoying.
He's so funny. Honestly, he's ridiculous. The fact that he drives down to the projection room, like, oh, just, yeah, down
and makes
that
them walk.
Yeah.
A little much for me, but I'm going to read a 5-star. Okay, here's 5 stars, and this is the kind of person that loves this film. Holy shit, Contempt blew my mind. This is by far my favorite Godard film, and it's one of my new favorite movies. Why is it so damn good? The score, that shit was dope. The cinematography, that shit was stunning. Every shot in this film can be considered art and hung on a wall. The shots made my jaw drop. I'm actually thinking about posting some on Instagram because the film has some of the best cinematography ever put to film.
You're a mean,
the dialogue,
mean man.
Natural and realistic. And it has goddamn Fritz Lang in it. This movie is the fucking best. Hell yes. And then they finish by saying, also, thank you so much for 300 followers.
You're a mean man. Wow. 1 star. Why don't you love me anymore? That's life. I don't think Jean-Luc Godard knows that women are people. He wrote Jean-Luc Godard.
Oh boy.
Oh my god.
They really got you.
John.
Yeah, Godard. I have a half. Wait, is that the whole one?
Yeah, I didn't read the rest of it, but Do you want me to finish it? It goes, this movie is pretentious, masturbatory, and pointless. It's the worst combination of things. It looks nice, but that's about all it has going for it. I've really liked what I've seen of Godard so far. Other than this, I really hope the rest of his work isn't as contemptible.
I got bad news for you, buddy. I have a 1-star review here. I think Hell is a never-ending Godard film. And in a sense, I think each one of his movies gives you a window into that world by never fucking ending. Contempt is another horrible Godard film in which two non-characters espouse unmotivated nonsense at each other in three equally boring scenes. I don't know why people put up with this.
Damn. 3 stars. This is my last one. This is kind of a horror movie for me because one of my biggest fears is people annoying me when I'm trying to read in the bath.
I saw that one.
But yeah, I mean, she's reading Fritz Lang's book in the bath, and I love, oh, you know what I love? I forgot to mention, one of my favorite lines is when he goes, "Why do you look so contemplative?" And she goes, "I'm thinking, are you surprised?"
Oh,
what?
That's such an annoying line.
You're
horrible. It really is.
How is that an annoying line?
It's just so, like, I don't know, written and annoying and...
Holy shit. I think you're just salty.
No, I'm serious. How? Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it's better than Rian Johnson, that's for sure.
I can't talk to you. I can't talk to you about this movie.
Not this one.
Wow.
Well, we did just talk for an hour on this movie.
I talked for an hour, and you muttered the same 3 insults.
I mean, yeah, that's fair. But what are we doing next week?
I don't know. Truly, I don't know.
Once Upon a Time in the West.
Oh, cool.
Sergio Leone.
Nice.
Spaghetti Western.
Nice.
Which, spoiler alert, is a film we've both already seen and really like. Am I showing our hand too early? I don't know. I'm just looking forward to agreeing with you next week.
Yeah, let's see if we agree.
You know, it's funny because on Siskel and Ebert, they disagreed all the time, but they had like how many movies per show? Like in a 30-minute span, they'd cover like 6, 7, 8 movies or whatever. So if they disagreed, it was for like 2 or 3 minutes and then they got to move on. But you and I, if we disagree on a film, it's a whole hour of us going back and forth. Like it's like cannonballs on like Pirates of the Caribbean.
It's really stressful.
There's our Disneyland
it.
Reference for the episode.
The cannonballs and pirates.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't like it. It makes me uncomfortable.
Well,
it makes me want to like hit you and then leave the room.
You heard it here first, folks.
No, I love Once Upon a Time in the West.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
Yeah.
Well, until then.
Au revoir.
I'm going to keep one of my eyes open when I go to sleep tonight, just to say.
I'm going to serve you like brie cheese with a baguette and poison it. Then I'm going to say.
How fitting. You're gonna like engrave Godard on like
I don't like him that much. I really like him. He's not one of my favorites.
You know what would be like a very fitting end? Like if I die, like paying someone to tattoo Godard's name on my body somewhere. And then like I get buried with like forever Godard on my skin.
No, I'll speak at your funeral and the whole subject of my speech will be how much you loved Godard and how much he influenced you.
Greg just really tried to live his everyday life.
Like
and...
Jean-Luc. He even started smoking cigars.
Yeah,
his glasses matched him perfectly.
If it was Jean-Luc Picard, I could get down with that. Now that's a role model.
Yeah.
Anyway. Well, this was fun.
All right.
Until next time.
That's a word for it, but okay.
I'm Greg.
I'm Jackie.
We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Seen and Heard is an official podcast of the Arroyo Film Club, featuring Greg Kleinschmidt and Jacqueline Postagian. Theme music by Andrew Cox. If you like what you heard, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review. If you have any questions, comments, or you just want to say hi, email us hello@seenandheardpod.com or visit our website, www.seenandheardpod.com.